Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast program. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your peers on the entrepreneurial journey of self-discovery, leadership revolution, and life success. Learn something new from our mentoring conversation today. Thanks for tuning in this Monday. Guess what? You know, when I'm talking to a therapist, things come out. Sometimes I just feel like I need to talk about it. And I mentioned in our last episode with Debbie Unterman, when we were talking about all the things that are going on in our society, one of the big issues is the hashtag MeToo and the volume of women coming forward. And I felt initially like I didn't want to talk about it because it happened in the 80s. To be honest, I'm asking all my clients and any guest to really talk about what they feel they need to talk about and what's closest to their heart and allow themselves to be vulnerable and put themselves out there. And so I would like to do the same. And because my story had to do, my rape had to do with someone, a colleague at work in the 80s, I felt like I would like to talk about it, but I would like to invite Debbie Unterman to come back into the studio through Skype. And Mike is here too. So I wanted, you know, a little bit of an audience and a therapist to kind of sort out some of the pieces that a lot of people are experiencing as they're talking about their Me Too, hashtag Me Too experience. So Debbie, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Nancy, and thank you for your courage today. This is going to mean a lot to a lot of people.
Thank you. I think so, too. Debbie is a clinical hypnotherapist, author, mediator, speaker, and game inventor. She likes to help people see things clearly in some non-traditional ways. In her book, Talking to Myself, Learning to Love the Voices in Your Head, Debbie describes an array of characters that we started to talk about at our last episode that we shared together, where you gave the greatest advice possible to someone, sleeping with the teddy bear.
Thank you
for that. So as a master alchemist and trainer, she's also been delving inside people's heads for the last 34 years. And I felt like, and she's achieved proven results with people suffering from PTSD, which in our next episode we'll be talking about. And she addresses sexual abuse, which is what I would like to focus on today. And Debbie and I came up with this hashtag that we would like to use and developed as a place for people, like a Facebook page and Twitter, for people to be able to share a little bit more about what they're experiencing. And it's a way for her and I to stay connected and to share, you know, things that are important to us that we think other people would like to, should start a conversation about. And it's called hashtag Truth Telling Wins. So let's start with Truth and Love Always Win by Mahatma Gandhi. When I despair, I remember that all through history, the ways of truth and love have always won. There have been tyrants and murderers, and for a time they can seem invincible. But in the end, they always fall. Think of it, always.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it's very encouraging, and I thought I'm going to share it with our listeners and with you today.
You found the right quote.
All right, so before I share my story, could you talk a little bit about kind of the transition in our world right now and why we think truth tellers are coming forward in such a big volume.
You know, it's always easier to not believe something horrible. the first thing that someone thinks when, you know, a policeman comes to their door and says that someone was killed is, no, it can't be. I mean, there's never a time when you want to think the worst. I think it's human nature to want to think well of people. And so even when a victim herself, and I'm going to use the feminine, but I totally understand that it is not always women that boys are harassed and abused
and
have horrible things happen to them too. But if I, for once in our culture, speak in the feminine, please understand that it's just that there are more times when it is a girl. So even when something happens to a girl, she still wants to think worse of herself and better of her abuser, that somehow she did something to make him do that, that it must have been her fault. And when we are told that it was someone that we know, you know, our brother, our father, our uncle, our priest, our neighbor, we don't want to believe it. And I hate to say it, but that's the problem. It's so much easier to believe, no, it couldn't have happened. No, he wouldn't do that. And yet, what is happening right now is that we already know, you know, the statistics say that 1 out of every 3 girls, 1 out of every 5 boys is abused. I think the statistics are low. When I talk to other therapists, they say, now, it's about everybody I see. And I have to say almost the same thing. Maybe I don't know the day they come to me, but it comes out. It is almost everyone I see and have been seeing. If I would say, okay, maybe it's not everyone, maybe it's half. So if we say that there are millions of people that this has happened to, how can it be that no one is guilty of doing it?
Yeah, right.
It's just that no one has wanted to believe that anyone could have been guilty of doing it. So all of a sudden, it seems like all of a sudden, people are crawling out of the woodworks to say it happened and that was the person that did it. And until, you know, sometimes 45, 50 people can accuse a person and we still don't want to believe them. So
especially if you
know that it happens.
Well, and especially if you've known the person, you know, it's hard to, you know, then you feel like, well, who is this person? I thought I knew this person, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's such a violation, and it is easy to move into denial.
It's much easier for us to deny, and that is such a disservice to both the person that had it happened to them and the person who did it, because they're not getting help. So what's happening now? These seemingly, you know, innocent things, supposedly, it was just, you know, something that everybody did, are being told about. And now people are going, oh, how could he do such a horrible thing? Well, we have allowed this to happen for this long. And the truth is, just like that Beyonce song, I think it's Beyonce, tell me if I'm wrong, You're only upset because you got caught. You know, how does that go?
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
It's like they finally will apologize, not because they did it, because they got caught doing it. They will take the secret to their grave. The secret, they don't care. It didn't do anything to them to do it. They don't even have a conscience about it because it's condoned pretty much by society. That's the worst part, is that we have let everybody get away with this, and it does not hurt the abuser. The abuser gets off scot-free. all of a sudden they start with a pity party. Oh, I didn't mean it. Oh, I didn't know it hurt you that much. Oh, I thought it was okay. Like they're the victim? What? Give me a break.
Yeah.
The person that they have done it to, their life has changed from the moment it happened to them, to her.
Well, and part of the reason that I think that so many women are uniting and coming forward is, like you had talked about, you know, women need to speak up, or anyone abused in a situation with someone who has perpetuated the cycle of abuse, that that they come forward in numbers. So
yes.
So it's... So you can see the pattern of how this person has been behaving. But part of also why I think women are speaking up along with the numbers is because our lives have changed, like you were just talking about. In my experience, so here's my experience.
Okay.
I got a teaching degree. I moved from Bemidji State University down to the Twin Cities area in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And I got a job and started working. I was a nanny for a while and then got a job with Hobbit Travel. And then I was feeling like I wanted to make a bigger impact in somebody's life. And I had gotten a degree in elementary education, but I felt like... I wasn't quite ready to teach yet. And so I went to investigate selling real estate. And there was someone who was going through the training, and she was saying, well, I'm becoming a realtor, but maybe you want to check out this, you know, financial company, Equitable Financial Companies in Edina. I was just working there for a while, and you might enjoy working there. Which she's also someone that I had to kind of rectify in my thinking, because I felt like she didn't warn me that I was going into, you know, a really aggressive work environment that, you know, I guess I felt like she set me up. So anyways, I pass the test, you know, get my life insurance license, and then I go through the training, and months, you know, or weeks are starting to go by. And then pretty soon, one of the top performers is starting to kind of circle around, like he's coming over to where my cube is, more frequently. And then he's joking around. He's got his buddy with him. And then pretty soon they're, you know, inviting me to go on a sales call with them. And, which by the way, I did not do. But you know, over months and months, you know, like I would be calling at night for clients, and he would come over and put his hands on my shoulders. And, you know, he's married, you know, it was really inappropriate, but I was single at the time. And I feel like there's a different set of rules that men use when women are single. Not all men. And I was grateful that before this experience, I had years and years, of great relationships with men. And I had a lot of male friends. Because I think if this had been my first experience with, you know, working and developing relationships with men, it would have really probably skewed my ability to develop male friendships in the future. But anyways, eventually, you know, he just got raunchier and raunchier. We had a workshop together, and then he's putting his keys down his crotch, and, you know, my keys down his crotch, you know, just really kind of graphic, gross stuff. And so anyways, a week before I was raped, I went to my agency. I didn't go directly to my manager. I went to the agency manager, or he was the regional manager. And I said, you know, I'm really having difficulty with this particular person. And he said, oh, yeah, Nancy. He's Southern. Oh my God, you're so cute. You got such a nice personality. Of course men are gonna like come on to you. You know, worry about it. You know, just, you know, keep working.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So a week later the rape happened, and a week later, you know, a couple days later I quit. And then I went back into teaching, and my life moved on. And then about a year later, so I was living, and you're not familiar with this area, but my apartment was in Bloomington, and I had worked in Edina, and my apartment was probably about, you know, 3 miles from that office. And one evening, a girlfriend and I had gone out, and she had picked me up, and so she was dropping me off, and I look in the entry, and there's Mark. And I'm like, what the heck is he doing here? He's the guy who raped me. And I was just like, oh God, this is so uncomfortable. And I had not told anybody because I, you know, I could barely, you know, identify, you know, because I felt like it was my fault. You know, like I'm part of the problem, you know, here, like it was, you know, if we divvy out the responsibility here, you know, I must not have set good enough boundaries kind of thing. So anyways, I was just really frustrated. And so I decided, that I wasn't going to take this on. Like, I'm not the problem. So I went to the property manager. And then I said, you know, gave a description of the person and said, you know, if this person comes around, he's unwanted here. You know, I do not want anything to do with him, and I just want you to call the police. And he said, fine. And then I got to my apartment, and I'm like, God, that just makes me feel icky. And so the following day, I called him up, and I said, Mark, hi, it's Nancy. Were you at my apartment building last night? And he goes, why? And I said, because I saw you. And he goes, oh, you did? Why didn't you let me up? Right. And I said, listen, you've got a problem, and it's a big problem. And you're a perpetrator. You need to get some help. And if you don't leave me alone, I'm going to make your life a living hell. I know where you live. I know your wife is 9 months pregnant. I know that she would not appreciate this. And I'm planning to go go to the police and have a, what is it called, where you, a restraining order out on you. And then I just hung up. Okay. Then 2 seconds later, Nance, it's Mark. I said, yeah, what do you want? He said, you're right. I've got a problem. I won't bother you again. So fast forward, a few years go by, and I was working with a public speaker, and there was someone in the audience who asked me to do some training for them. And he said that they have a food business, and someone had been in the workplace, had been, raped, and they're trying to develop the trust back in the work environment. And they were wondering if I would do like a series of workshop to help establish a level of trust again. And so I said, sure. And so I did the workshop, and the person who had committed the rape was gone, and the victim was there. And just like you had expressed, everybody was kind of blaming her, like it was her fault. They didn't want to really, because everybody knew, you know, the guy. And usually, you know, these are men who are charismatic. And, you know, people can like them, but you notice that they're a little off. You know, they're talking about sex a lot. And they're making people uncomfortable. And so I did the workshop. It was a series of like 3 workshops, 3 days in a row. And at the end, the woman who had been victimized, she said, wow, because I described a work environment before there's a sexual violation and after. And she goes, oh my God, I mean, how did you know that? And I just blurted out, well, because I've been raped too. And I had never said the word. And so I was driving home and I remember gripping the steering wheel and like shaking a little bit, like, oh my God, I mean, that really did happen. And yeah. And so fast forward then a few years later, I'm dating a guy who's in an office suite setting. And so there's like a bunch of small business owners and they all share a secretarial support staff. And so I go up there one day and I see Mark. And I'm like, oh my God. I walk in the building and he's like in the restaurant area. And he asked me if I, you know, wanted to go for lunch sometime. And I said, hell to the no. And then I just walked away and felt, you know, shaking. And then I talked, and then pretty soon I found out he actually was like friends with the guy I was dating. And officing on the same floor as him. And so then I just, so I decided that I'm going to meet with the office manager and let her know about Mark and tell her my experience because no one protected me from him, but right. I knowing what I know, I'm going to protect other women.
Right.
And so I confidentially had a meeting with the manager, told her what I experienced, and she like totally resonated with how uncomfortable the women were on the floor around him. And then I was coming, so, you know, off that meeting, right, then the guy I was dating met me by the elevator, and we're going down the elevator, and there were some other people, and, you know, I was just acknowledging people, and we walk off the elevator, and he says, well, no wonder you were raped. I mean, you're, like, you know, so friendly to, like, everybody. And I said, well, I happened to have been living with him at the time, the only guy I lived with before I got married. I said, I'm moving my things out as soon as I find a new place because this relationship is like over.
Oh, my God.
But I'm finding, you know, so I felt really good about how I felt like every time Mark kept showing up, like there was a piece of the universe helping me to heal my heart. And to repair the situation and be stronger in being direct and using my voice, you know, in a way and my behavior in a way that helped me move forward in relationships with people so I could build trusting relationships again.
It's amazing that he kept showing up.
I know, right?
And that you didn't do more than just shake a little while you were holding the wheel. Wow, you are a strong woman.
Okay. Yeah, I think I am.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not afraid to go in the lion's den.
But isn't that ridiculous that you had to quit?
Well, that's what I mean. I think that's why women are standing up in huge numbers, mm-hmm. because we're the ones who were perpetrated against and power
yes.
was used and we were assaulted and we're the ones that have to quit our jobs.
Right.
You know, there's something really wrong with our society that is supporting
right.
all these men who are doing these horrific things. And what's going on with our power structure that we're like allowing it? And that's why I feel so strongly about like that Netflix reality documentary series about the Keepers, about, you know, who killed Sister Kathy Selznick, because in Maryland, that was the first Catholic community that was built in the United States. And so, you know, there's that modeling that went on, of these really healthy dynamics of the power structure and who has the power. And I'm frankly refusing to participate in anything where I'm not equal.
And radio, podcast, that's a place where there's equality, but there's very little in terms of corporate America, political America, medical America. You know, where can we find equality?
Well, and I feel, yeah, like, well, and with my experience, I never felt safe in a work environment. You know, like I just never felt safe again. And one thing about education and teaching, I always felt safe. I always felt like our institutions, and I know there's abuse going on there, but I just didn't feel like I was prey. You know, like somebody's looking for me, because as a teacher, you have a lot more autonomy and you have a lot more ability to set up, you know, the classroom and the culture. And the same thing you do with small business is you're setting up the culture. And I wanted to bring out my story because until we understand sensuality, sexuality, seduction, and grooming,
mm-hmm.
And how the environments are set up for people to, you know, slowly degrade their moral fiber and their character until we do something really constructive and that we're aware that our core values are non-negotiable. You know, if we're in a position as leaders, we're holding ourselves accountable for finding the potential in people and processes. We need to set up the culture for people to excel. And we've got to be open and honest without a focus on pleasing, perfecting, and being a performer in front of people. We really need to ground ourselves in the truth and speak from our heart in a way and live by, you know, the values, the core values that we've set up in our businesses. And I think people need help with doing that.
Yeah, you know, you brought up the sensuality, sexuality, I forget the third word, and grooming.
Seduction.
But seduction, we need to go more into those, because grooming is the first one. And does everyone understand what that means?
What does it mean?
Whether it's
and
a
when does
kid.
Seduction move into like grooming?
Well, grooming is what it starts with. That's how they try to see if you are a mark. And they try to go a little further and see when you will stop them.
Well, and yeah, that's what I felt. That's what I felt happened with Mark. I'm sorry to talk over you. Go ahead and finish what you were saying.
That just what your boyfriend said. Well, no wonder you're so nice.
Yeah.
You know, that's exactly it. And by being the nice girl that our parents bring us up to be, it ends up getting us hurt.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not doing us service. We have to start with little kids. And, you know, I have a client that I had to discuss with her. She had to tell me that her brother has a girlfriend, not a wife, just a girlfriend, not even a live-in girlfriend, who has an 8-year-old little boy. And they, you know, her brother wants to bring the girlfriend and the little boy to sleepovers with her 4.5 and 2-year-old girls.
Yeah, very inappropriate.
And she's saying, as soon as you would walk in the house, we would leave and take a hotel because we cannot be in the same house. And nobody understands. Her dad doesn't understand. Her brother doesn't understand. Her mom might, but, you know, you try to smooth things over. And her dad tries to say, oh, I'll have my eye on him all the time. I wouldn't let anything happen to my girls, you know, his granddaughters. Well, it takes the blink of an eye for something to happen. you can't watch kids all the time because they're going to say, can we go upstairs and play? Can we go outside and play? And that's where it happens, where they drop the keys down their pants or they say, I'll show you mine if you show me yours. You know, all the things. That's where, and little kids don't, they're not taught to not play that way. So we have to start by teaching the girls, the little girls, the boundaries, and that they can come to their parents, whatever they have to say, that they will be believed, that they will be protected, that there's nothing they can't say to them. And a lot of parents aren't that self-aware or empowered to be able to handle that.
Yeah,
they don't want to know. They don't want to start the conversation. They don't want to bring it up. Like, you know, if they put their head in the sand, we'll never have to talk about it. We won't have to worry.
Yeah.
And we have a culture right now that if every parent made it completely clear, it's a very easy way to tell little girls or boys what is okay and what isn't okay. It's done by talking about the place the bathing suit covers. That's all you have to say. Is no one is allowed to touch you in the parts of you that your bathing suit covers.
They're doing that. They're doing that. Well, they're doing that at school now.
Good.
Yeah, they're having those conversations.
Good. Then it has to be okay for the kids to come to the parents first and then the teachers and everybody else. And the adults have to be prepared for the conversation and to believe them. Because this is what, you know, I was spending hours with her going over, you know, how do we convince them that this is going to work? And then I said, you know, they're not understanding. Your brother and your father don't understand that in the blink of an eye, everything can change for your kids. Your daughters, their worlds can collapse, you know, if this happens. And then I remembered the fact is that the thing that changes whether a person goes into devastation, possibly drug addiction, eating addiction, sex addiction, maybe being on the street, homeless, you know, a runaway kid, all the things that could happen. It's all if they are not believed or if they never tell. If they just keep the secret or they actually try to tell and their parents poo-poo it and go, no, that didn't happen. And they sometimes are gaslighted by their own parents,
yeah,
trying to tell them that what is not. The one statistic of the ones that have these things happen and they still are able to grow up healthy are the ones who, you know, it might have happened to, but they were able to tell, they were believed, and they were protected after that. So there is a way to change it. And I was able to remember while I was talking to her, oh, it's going to be okay. You are the parent and you can make it okay. You know, and don't let the kids sleep over, obviously. You just, you know,
good
tie your horse up, you know, you still tie the horse to the post. You don't just let it be, you know, run away, you know, even if you're trusting. So you still do the right thing.
How can we help our business owners here? I was thinking that maybe we could outline the difference. Like, for example, with sensuality, I think of yoga, that in yoga, we want to make the body pliable and supple so that you can get more into your body and your breath and out of your mind. So it's a state of being using your senses, and it's a desirable state that, you know, people want to reach. You know, so there's a difference between, like, in yoga where it's sensuality, where you're moving into a position where you're becoming more in tune with your body, versus, you know, having sex. You know, this isn't about sex. It's really about becoming more supple and more movable in your body, which releases you into, you know, feeling like you're on top of the world.
The problem might be the word sensuality, because we know that we have five senses, but you say the word sensuality and people are going to get a different picture.
Yeah.
So everybody
relates it to sex?
Yeah. The word sensuality sounds like you're feeling someone's energy, if not their body, and maybe looking in their eyes and having a, you know, a experience with another person. You don't usually think of sensuality as with yourself that no one else is participating in, because if you see someone sensual, it brings something up. So there have to be boundaries around the healing effects of yoga. Yoga is a good idea for centering. How about if the word more was centering?
Yeah, it's written. It's written in the textbooks, you know, about sensuality and
with
connecting
corporate.
And becoming not corporate. No. But all right. Well, that's a good clarification of, you know, with the, you know, being careful of how the language you use and how you use it. And in a work environment, especially a small business where you're working a lot of hours and you're under a lot of pressure to, you know, produce something that will provide cash flow so that, you know, people can get paid and support their livelihoods, that, you know, I just feel like our human resource departments and the legal system is set up in a way that keeps people from really repairing when they've overstepped a boundary.
Yeah.
And so if in a work environment that we've set up, right, we've got people working together, if we're feeling like the relationships are changing in a way where it's becoming a power imbalance, or if we're the ones creating the power imbalance, what are some cues that we can look for to help us address the issue in a quicker way before it would reach a human resource even issue?
Wow. You know, that would mean taking personal responsibility and being aware, being self-aware. So we're running into the problem right there. People are a product of their upbringing and they don't have that much self-awareness. So I think the environment needs to have rules set. And if people could just know the rules and follow them, they don't have to just police themselves. They can know that there are rules already set up and they need to be followed.
Well, and these are business owners, so they're setting up the rules.
Mm-hmm.
There are also the type of people that in order to be successful in business, you have to explore breaking certain rules, you know, right? To be successful. And so along with that, you know, is a person's behavior. And if you're making a lot of money, you know, you're kind of a person who takes more risks.
Mm-hmm.
And so, the entrepreneurs that I'm working with, I mean, that's why we talk, you know, we put in place core values and figure out, you know, how they work to your benefit. And then how to talk about it and how to have policies and rules in place that you can follow too, right? And give people an opportunity or create the space for people to have honest conversations with you.
Yes, definitely. That, and it has to be modeled.
Yeah, very good. All right. Well, I think we're, it feels like we're at a good place to kind of wrap up our conversation.
Can I just say
about truth telling? Yeah, I want you to.
I want to finish the circle about grooming, because I started it with what grooming is, and they see if they can go a little further, a little further, a little further.
Yeah.
But then I got into what has to be taught to children and modeled by parents being willing to take the truth that's given to them. It's not always easy to believe. But that is what stops people from grooming. You know, the ones who are trying to groom you, they immediately look and say, oh, I'm not going to be able to get away with anything with this one. And, you know, they often look at people that don't have real good ego boundaries, or if it's kids, it would be kids that don't have maybe a dad or, you know, struggling.
Right, when they're in vulnerable situations.
Yeah. So that's why I say it has to start at the beginning, because then the person who's trying to groom someone is going to go off to someone else. So that's really important. I wanted people to realize that that's how you stop it.
And if you've got some unclear boundaries, it's never too late to clear them up. It's never too late to say, you know what? I was totally out of line there. That's inappropriate. It's stopping here. Let's reestablish what the parameters are for our working relationship.
And do you know that is not an easy conversation to have?
Well, this is where, I'm known for, like my clients said, one of the things they love about me is that I, when I have a conflict, you know, if I work with people for months and months in all different types of work environments and situations. And so there's always going to be, you know, some situation where you find yourself in conflict with someone, especially a client that you're working with. And so I'm known for, actually, people count on me to address the conflict. Like,
yeah,
they say,
okay,
you know, how you address the conflict, they don't like it. But it's so clear that then they know how to respond with it. And they in turn then, because they feel that, I had overstepped a boundary with someone in how I was, addressing their pain, you know, and, they didn't like the way, you know, they thought I was like a little, like I wasn't empathetic enough, which I understand, I work on a lot. And so I just shared with the client, you know, I'm really sorry. You know, I overstepped the boundaries. You know, you were like showing me your belly wound, and I'm like, I took my finger and like pressed it in the wound, you know? So it's sitting with, because you initially don't want to take it takes a while for me to realize, you know, what did I do, you know, and what was my spot part in what I felt like we had then a strained conversation after that. But when I came back and said, yeah, here's what I did, I'm really sorry. And she said to me, you know, no one has ever apologized to me. I've never experienced someone fully owning the piece in what didn't work in our relationship. And because of that, you know, we were able to develop a much deeper sense of trust, which is what I need to be able to do. And so when people experience that and they see how it feels, you know, they hear it, then they can then they can sense it in their bodies and say, oh, that felt good. Wow. Oh, I really was heard.
Yes.
You know, that, but you can't get to empathy unless you're really got that accountability piece, you know, where you're like totally taking it on. Like, I did cross this boundary. And I'm not a horrible person. You know, let's clean it up. And thank God, you know, they were forgiving.
Yeah.
So there's that, you know, interaction, and that doesn't happen all the time. You know,
modeling good behavior and being someone who is already knowing how to be a functional, therapeutic adult. But we don't have a lot of them in the world. And it's because of, you know, parents not being able to be there for their kids and kids having the negativity bias that tells them that there is something wrong with them in the first place.
Yeah.
So we need to start off by healing our own wounds and being able to tell the truth. You know, sometimes we are the first person a lot of people tell something that happened to them.
Yeah.
We have to be listeners. We have to be there, willing to hear uncomfortable truths. I have had some clients that have gone from therapist to therapist who their own story was too painful for the therapist to listen to. and they wouldn't take them as a client. So therapists have to empty themselves, heal themselves, be able to feel their own wounds that are cleared so they can be open to listening to others and everyone, because sometimes you can just be someone's best friend and be the person they can tell a secret to. And that can mean everything for them to just be able to say it. Yeah. That's why we want to say hashtag truth telling wins.
Right. Because in the end, you feel great about yourself. You know, when you pull yourself up, you know, and muster up the strength to kind of examine what happened and sort it out. And like some of the work that you do is help people create a different outcome for themselves that helps strengthen who they are so that they can have the skills to move forward.
Right. And it's by going back to when they were little and they believed the lies that were told to them about themselves.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable that people buy the bad parenting that sometimes gets instilled. And that's human nature. It's the way our species has evolved is because parents have to take care of the young. So the young know that the only way that they're going to make it is by making their parent right. And the only thing left is to make themselves wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
So if they were told they were stupid or ugly, they have to believe it because their parents told them. And at that point, their parents are God. So God has told them they were stupid or wrong or ugly or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And so we have to start it off by giving them self-esteem to be able to even speak up for themselves, to be able to tell the truth. They've never been believed. A lot of people have never been able to say their truth. My client I just finished with 5 minutes ago, before this, had this big lump in her throat for 48 years.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, people are suffering with their secrets. And like you said, your body talks and we need to learn to listen to our bodies. So this has been a big conversation. I wanted to offer our listeners two things. One, Debbie, you can talk about your discovery session that you would like to offer people. Why don't you do that first?
Okay, I would like to offer anybody who calls and says that they heard me talk on We Mentor Mondays with Nance Meyer, that they can have a chance to, my offer is if you tell me that you heard me here, that you can have a free half-hour discovery session so that I will be that listener, so that I can uncover the truth for ultimate healing for you. I will listen to you and be there for you to have someone to talk to. And we can start unwinding what you may have held in for years or some lies that people have told you about yourself. And I will help you to come into uncovering the truth.
Okay. And I'll have your website information on in the session notes so people can reach you directly. Otherwise, if people would like to come through me first, they certainly can. If you notice that this brought up some issues and that you feel like Debbie and I have been trusting voices for you, you can reach Debbie directly or you can go through me and talk to me and I will give you the information so that you can reach Debbie. But she's offering you a half an hour listening session. It's called a discovery session for free because you've been a listener of We Mentor Mondays with Nancy. And I would also like to offer a half an hour if you have been in a work situation and you're a business owner and you're having difficulty with setting up some good boundaries, solid boundaries for people to be able to talk openly and deal with conflict. You know, it's a big deal and we can do it in steps. So I want you to know that you have, you know, two options if you would like to go further with sorting out your own issues and making some progress in healing your own heart. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Thank you so much, Debbie, for your insights. I think this will help a lot of people during the holiday to kind of sort through their experience and try to put things into perspective, because there's so much coming at us right now in the world that's really wacky we need to kind of grapple with our bearings, you know, finding ways to ground ourselves.
And our two offers are quite a 1-2 punch. People could take up both of them and have an hour.
Yeah, that's right. Thanks for doing the math. All right. Mike Cabea, sound engineer, photographer, brother from another mother. All right. Mike says goodbye to everybody, and we'll talk to you next Monday. Thanks for tuning in.